seen monkeys until I went to Vrindavan. I might have seen one or two in a zoo somewhere in the USA, but that was the only place you would see monkeys. But when I went to Vrindavan, it was like walking in to a zoo. Everything was there. Cows were there, asses were there carrying big, big loads, and the hogs were there, and monkeys were everywhere. They're still in Vrindavan, and one of the most prolific animals in Vrindavan is the monkeys. And I was in Kartik this time in Vrindavan, and I made a mistake. I went twice on Parikram around Vrindavan on Ekadasi. One thing you do when you're in Vrindavan, Ekadasi, so many of the pilgrims, you take Vrindavan Parikram, so you go around. And I had been staying at Krishna Balaram Mandir, which they do a good job of controlling the monkey population there around Krishna Balaram Mandir, and especially around MVT flats there. And is what they do is they bring in other monkeys, because you have the monkeys in Vrindavan, and then you have these langur monkeys, which they're called the Hanuman monkeys. And somehow or other, they're afraid of these langurs. They're a little bit bigger. And even though there may be 100 of these other monkeys, if they just see 2 of these langur monkeys, they'll just stay away because they're afraid of them. So they hire men with their monkeys to keep monkeys away. So this is what it's like in the material world. They fight monkeys with other monkeys. So they have them under little ropes and it's interesting because these langurs, they're very, very friendly. They'll actually come right up. They'll eat from your hand. Or the other ones, they're very mean and nasty. So you would think it would be the other way, but it's the way it goes. So when I was there this last time, we were on Parikram, and right when we got, just before Keshika Palace, just a few minutes before there, where the boat launches in Vrindavan, I have my glasses on. And I didn't think anything of it. And I'm happily just walking with the devotees, and we're chanting, and we're walking along, and the Jamuna was right there. And all of a sudden, I felt someone climbing on my back, you know, like just in a split second. And I thought, who the heck is doing that? So, of course, it was a monkey. And that quickly grabbed my glasses and took off, ran away with them, and went up on a rooftop somewhere. And I had to bribe a boy to get them back for me, probably the monkeys. They work in conjunction with the locals there. So now they're very trained up, you know. So I had, you know, had to give some rupees. And the whole time, what they do, the monkeys, as soon as they get your glasses, they just start nibbling on the end. So we started chewing on the end. But I got them back right away. But it cost me too much money. I'm embarrassed to say how much money I gave for my glasses. But I can't see very well without them. So anyway, it cost me 50 rupees, which was, the crackers only cost 3 rupees, but I wound up giving 50 rupees just to make sure I got them back. So then I put them on and I walked another 100 feet. And there in Vrindavan now, which they have a stay order against it now, they were building a flyover right by Keshika Palace, right over the Jamuna River. So right now it just stands, these big concrete pillars are there. So I had put the glasses in my pocket. So when I saw the concrete pillar, I knew, and I'm very compulsive, and I knew the edge, these are the same glasses, I knew the edge of them had these bites on it, so I was very bothered. So I took the glasses out and I started scraping them against the smooth concrete that was right in front of me. And I scraped for a minute, and I'm right by Keshika Palace, and I scraped this way, and I turned it over, and I scraped, and I felt it, and it was smooth. So I went like this, and I put them on. And as soon as I put them on, another monkey grabbed my glasses. So this is what they're like, these monkeys in Vrindavan. They're like very intense and very expert. And that fast they can take. So as soon as I put them on, I just went to check them to see that they felt all right. And that fast, a different monkey came and grabbed them. So with this time, I had a much better deal. For 10 rupees, I got 2 deeps had to offer to Jamuna, and I got my glasses back. So I did quite well that time, because he got my glasses for free just by buying the nice ghee lamp and the flowers to offer to the Jamuna. So then I put the glasses in my pocket finally, and I thought, twice I got, in 5 minutes, twice my glasses were stolen. But when I first went to Vrindavan, this was especially at Radha Damodar temple area. Jai Maharaj, Hare Krishna. So first going to Vrindavan, when you go around Radha Damodar there at Seva Kunj, the monkeys who took my glasses, they're descendants of these same monkeys that have been there for many, many years. These are like the great, great, great grandchildren of the monkeys that have been harassing the devotees and the Brijvasis there for a very long time. So when I was first there with Srila Prabhupada at Radha Damodar Temple, Prabhupada was staying in his room, so every evening he would have darshan for his disciples. And last night we were talking, there were some 40 to 50 of his disciples during Kartik. And Prabhupada, when he was in India, it was very different than what I had experienced in the West. Because in India, all of the devotees, they were performing a lot of austerities to live in India at this time. And most of the Westerners, when you were in India, you were getting sick. Malaria was there, jaundice was there, dysentery was something that was going on very often, and these things were difficult to deal with. So Prabhupada he gave the devotees a lot of mercy, and he gave them a lot of his association. And his room in the evening for darshan was open for all the devotees who were around, you know, and lived at the temple and performed service, which that didn't happen that way when he was in the States. So every evening he would have darshan in his room, and of course, as he did with class, he would speak the English. He would say, I'm speaking in English for my disciples' benefit. So this one evening, Prabhupada speaking, and of course the locals, they would also come. People would come and they would offer, you know, to Prabhupada. They would offer fruits, they would bring bananas, they would bring apples, whatever they could afford to buy, spend a few rupees, and they would put it at the base of Prabhupada's Vyasasan. So this one evening we're sitting there, and Prabhupada, his rooms had very low doors, just maybe 4 foot high, and the walls were like 2 feet thick, the Radha Damodar temple. So you would have to duck down to go into his room. One time I didn't duck. Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk and he rang his bell. So I was just on the veranda. So as soon as he rang his bell, of course you jump and I run into his room. So I ran in, but I lifted my head too soon, because the wall wasn't this thick, it was this thick. So as soon as I passed the front of the wall, I lifted my head, and this was solid concrete, and it just slammed into the wall, and I just saw immediately, I saw the Brahmajyoti. By Prabhupada's mercy. And I just, boom, and then I opened my eyes, and Prabhupada looked at me, and he went, he said, that's to teach you how to be humble. So it was another lesson in humility, was bend down. This was part of becoming humble, had to bend down, offer obeisances. We always offered obeisances. In and out Prabhupada's room, if you did it 100 times, you went in his room in the day, you offered obeisances when you went in, you offered obeisances when you came out. So in the evening, he's sitting in his room and he's speaking to so many devotees, and in front of him there's apples and bananas. So all of a sudden the monkey just bam was in the room right through the doors, and in a matter of 5 seconds it was in the door, had the bananas, and was out the door just like that. So as soon as it happened, Prabhupada looked and he said, "That's mystic power." And Prabhupada always would minimize mystic powers, huh? Because of course in India at this time, all the time, people are always interested in mystic opulences, mystic powers. They want to be impressed by the Swami who can, you know, produce some dust or produce a little gold or piece of fruit in his hands, and they're impressed by this. But Prabhupada said, "See, that's mystic power." He said, "Can you do that?" You know, everybody's going. He said, in 5 seconds, he comes in, he takes the money, or the money, the bananas, and he's gone. He said, "So that's mystic power." He said, "Mystic power means doing something you can't do." He said, "That's all. You practice and you do." He said, "So even the monkey has mystic power." He said, "Because you can't do that." Because many times people would say, not to him, but they would like, "Does Prabhupada have any magic? Does he do magic? Did you see Prabhupada do anything mystical?" And Prabhupada would say, "If I did anything magic," he would say, "it's that I didn't change one word from what my spiritual master told me." He said, "If I did anything magic," he said, "that I did." He said, "Whatever he told me," he said, "simply I'm repeating." He said, like the mailman giving you the mail. So then, these were the monkeys in Vrindavan. Very, very mischievous, Prabhupada would say. So this one day, there was a week where Prabhupada was staying up on the first floor. He wasn't staying in his rooms, which were on the ground floor by the temple. He was upstairs, and his rooms were being painted. So he went upstairs where Guru Das and Jamuni used to live. So that was the roof. So then the room was there. Prabhupada had a sitting room, nice sitting room, and the bedroom was there. And then there was a veranda, which was the roof of the ground floor. In India, it's always the roof is another place to stay and do so many things. So Prabhupada's process was he would take massage sitting on the roof with the sun, you know, the morning sun. Again, morning sun, Prabhupada said, gives you energy. So he would put his back to the sun and I'd give him massage. And before massage, he would have me put 2 buckets on the roof. And these, of course, these were in plastic buckets. Now everything's plastic, everything. But these were brass. I guess brass, is that what they would be? Brass or anyway, that color, but like brass bucket. So 2 of them would be there, and he'd say, "That's all." He said, "You don't have to heat the water." He said, "Just let the sun heat it." So that's what he would use to bathe after the massage, after his oil massage. And the monkeys also would go and drink that water as well. But Prabhupada wasn't bothered by all these things, these natural occurrences. When I went to Calcutta with him, first time in Calcutta, which was very wonderful, his sister, we called her Pishima, which meant auntie, but her name was Bhavatarini. But I always thought her name was Pishima, but her name wasn't Pishima. That was just the term we called auntie. We referred to her as auntie because it was Prabhupada's sister. So she was very, very sweet, and she loved Prabhupada's disciples very much. And she would bring everyday sweets from Kesi Das. Kesi Das, of course, was the, Prabhupada said, was the best sweet maker in Calcutta. So she would bring these sweets and she would give to the devotees, and she would also bring in the Prabhupada's room. So those sweets we would keep by Prabhupada's table. And when people would come, you would get these sweets, and in there would be rasgullas and sandesh, there would be rasmalai in there, and
Rasgulla.
Yes, rasgulla. No, I'm thinking of the cashew, like burfi. Anyway, these different things were there. And everything was, as Prabhupada said, they were first class. And they all had the silver foil on it, you know. And so it was very, very good. So, and of course, I was young brahmachari at that time, so I also liked very, very much. So whenever I could get them, I would get some sweets. But the one day I went in, And I opened up the box, and there was just ants all over these sweets. So I looked, and I thought, that's a good opportunity here, because they're covered in ants. I couldn't let Prabhupada have them, right? So I was in the room, and I offered obeisances, and I opened the box, and I said, Prabhupada, these sweets are covered with ants. So I thought, I'll just take them outside and get all the ants off and eat them. And Prabhupada looked at me and he smiled. He said, that's okay. He said, they don't eat very much. So then he said, bring me a thali and I'll show you what to do. So he knew right away what my plan was. But I was completely transparent with Prabhupada. He knew everything. He knew anyway. He did have mystic power and he could read your mind. And it wasn't easy, it wasn't difficult to read mind for anyone, but Prabhupada could really understand everything that you were thinking, you know. So he had me bring in a thali, and then he said, now put water. He always had his water pot next to him, a clay water pot. He said, so fill it halfway with water, the thali, which I did. So he told me to get all the ants off of the sweets, go out onto the veranda, shake them off. And then I brought them back in. And he said, now you turn a katuri upside down and put it in the center of the thali. So it became like a dam all around, you know. And then he said, now you put the box of sweets on top of the katuri. He said, so now no ants will get to it. He said, so it'll be okay. So we didn't waste any of those sweets either. So, but even the ants, they were busy. And in Mayapur, it was the same thing. And Prabhupada in Los Angeles, he told me to use turmeric. He said that was powdered turmeric. He said you put in the corners, in the rooms. He said, and then the ants, they don't like the turmeric. He said, so we'll keep them away. But in Mayapur, that didn't work. You know, Prabhupada had his sitting place. He would take prasadam in his bedroom in Mayapur. He had his sitting room and his bedroom. They were both not so big rooms. But he would take prasadam in his bedroom, and he would just like here. So he would sit looking at the wall. Very often, Prabhupada's method was to have just a little straw mat on the floor, but he wouldn't sit against the wall and look out. He would face the wall. So the table, or the chokhi, the table, low table, was against the wall, and he would have his straw mat there in front of it, and he would look at the wall. So you would bring in his prasadam and table, and then he would sit there and start taking his lunch. So every day it was the same thing, because the ants were there, and they knew when it was lunchtime as well. You know, they had their schedule. Prabhupada had his schedule. Everybody has a schedule. And Prabhupada would say that everyone, not just humans, but everyone, they're having their schedules. Huh? They go out for food every day. They come back. Like he told us, the birds. You know, when Prabhupada would, on the walk, he would say, you would hear the birds in the trees early in the morning. So he'd look and he'd say, do you know what they're saying? And, you know, of course we didn't know. And we'd just look at him. He'd say, they're all talking about where they're going to go to get food today. He said, that's what they're talking. He said, this is a discussion. He said, they're all saying where to go to get food. He said, and in the afternoon when they come back, and again they're chirping, they're telling each other, oh, I found food over here, and I found food over here. So they let each other know where to go get food. He said, so this is the business of all the living entities. Everyone's doing the same thing, how to survive, how to get food. So these ants, they had their scouts, right, all through the day. You always see one or two walking. And then as soon as there's food around, they tell everyone. So Prabhupada, he would sit there. And the process with Srila Prabhupada eating lunch was he always started out with his sabjis. If there was karela, bitter melon, he would have bitter melon first. And then you bring hot chapatis one at a time. Puff up. They have to puff up. So you bring in a chapati and you offer obeisances. You run out of the room, you make another chapati. And by the time he's finished that chapati, he's ready. And you run in, and it's still puffed up, and you slide it onto his plate, and he goes, push it down like that. And that was always like the most fun part, was watching him push down that puffed up chapati, because it had a puff up. Otherwise you can't bring it to him. That's useless chapati. You go throw it. It's a crack. It doesn't puff up. Somehow or other, mine always puffed up. Oh, they're the only ones I brought to him, were the ones that puffed up. So then you'd run in and you'd put it down. So as he's eating his sabji and his chapatis and mixing a little dal, and the ants, they just start coming. And they're like lining up. They're coming up the side of his table. And they're like surrounding the plate. Now on his plate, everything's there. There's rice, dal, chapatis, and sweets. The sweets are there. So that's what, you know, they're very attracted to the sweets. And Prabhupada's just eating. That doesn't, every day would happen. And he's just eating. And the ants are coming up and they're starting to walk up the table. And he's eating his sabji, he's eating his chapati. And they're not, they don't go on the, onto the tray at all. They're just around, you know. And then he goes, and then of course after he's finished with chapati, he goes, no more. So then he opens up his rice, his steamed rice in a katori. He opens that up and then he starts putting his rice on the plate and he's mixing it with the sabjis. And as he's eating his rice, now he's on the rice and dal and he's not eating his sabjis. They would literally come and start on the area of the plate where he wasn't eating. And they're starting to take the Mahaprasad and Prabhupada's remnants over on the side. But they didn't go around the rest of the plate. So then when he's finished his sabjis, now there's sweets on his plate, but they didn't touch the sweets because Prabhupada didn't have them yet. So then when he was finished his rice and dal, then he'd go to his sweets. And then he'd take whatever sweet he was going to take. Always there was Sandesh and Rasgulu was there every day, every meal. Sandesh and Rasgulu was there. So then he has his sweets. And the minute he stood up, it was all over. That was it. It was, put up the, you know, the bugle sound. And the ants just went all over his plate. The minute he stood up, he just surrendered his plate and they came and they all took the Mahaprasadam. So then this was like the whole time. It was like a 2-week period. Every day I would have to take this plate of prasadam with the ants and shake all the ants off. And then you would distribute the Mahaprasadam, less the ants, hopefully, you know. But Prabhupada would just sit there very peacefully. Nothing would bother him, you know. And in Mayapur during that time too, he would take prasadam, it was very hot. So I would fan him after I was done bringing chapatis. Prabhupada would sit there, and he always had the same, he would sit like this. This was his favorite eating position, was like that, his hand resting there. And like that. So as he's sitting there like that, and he's taking prasadam, so now I'm fanning him with a peacock fan every day. So the one day he just smiles, and he said, this is Vedic. He said, this is Vedic custom, he said. He said, in the Vedic custom, he said, the husband would be taking prasadam like this. He said, and the wife, she's fanning. He said, then after he's finished, he said, then all the children, they're eating. He said, then after the husband's fed and the children are fed, he said, if there's anything left, he said, then the wife, she would take prasadam. He said, in that way, she always cooks enough. Because everyone wants to take prasadam. Prabhupada always had formulas for how things went. And it, many times it was geared around prasadam. One day he came into my room in New Dwarka. And he would walk, I told you how he would walk through his rooms, just different rooms, and then he would go up and down the hallway. So at the end of the hallway was the servant quarters. So that was part of his walk, was to go by the servant quarters. And he would always, the door was always open. You never had a closed door with Prabhupada. You had the door open. because he had to be able to look in and see what you were doing. You know? So he would walk back and forth and chant. And this is one day I was saying how we're going to talk about Juhu, which we haven't yet. But this particular day he had gotten some information about Juhu. It wasn't good information about the property there. So he was walking around chanting japa, and you could hear him. Usually you wouldn't hear Prabhupada chant, but you could hear him chanting, and you could hear his beads in his bead bag. And he stopped right in front of the room and he looked at me. And he said, when you're in anxiety, he said, you chant very loudly. And I just said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, and if you're tired, he said, then he went on into other things. He said, and if you're tired, he said, you walk around and you chant. And Prabhupada, I said, he would chant with his arm behind his back and his hand out. He said, you just walk around. He said, then you chant your japa. He said, when you're tired. He said, so always you can chant your japa. He said, even as a householder, he said, you can chant your 16 rounds. He said, very easy. He said, you chant 4 rounds first thing in the morning when you get up. He said, and then you chant 4 rounds before every meal. So Prabhupada was taking 3 meals a day. It was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He said, so before each meal you chant 4 rounds. He said, and then in that way, he said, 16 rounds, finished. He said, with no difficulty. He said, and if you don't chant your 4 rounds, you can't eat that meal. That way you'll get your 16 rounds done. So he always brought it back to the prasadam was the impetus to do things, you know. So he said, this way, he said, you'll chant your 16 rounds. So he said, very easy. So back in Vrindavan with the monkeys, huh? These monkeys, they're still there. They've always been there. So there was another day, Prabhupada's now he's up on that top floor, the first floor, and the veranda is there. So after his massage, Prabhupada, he bathed right there in the sun, right outside on the veranda with his gamcha. Then he would go into his room and his cloth would all be laid out, his kopin, his dhoti, and kurta. So he went in, he would dress, and then after dressing, he would sit down behind his desk. And then he would put tilak on. So Prabhupada had this very wonderful little set that went everywhere with him around the world. It was a little silver set. And in it there was a small lota. And the lota was about the size of a golf ball. And it had a little silver lid. And it had a little spoon that fit in there. So that you would keep the water in there. So that would be on his desk. And then he had like a silver katori. And in there he had his ball of chandan, gopi chandan. And that usually also wound up, as he used it, it became more and more round. It became perfect. Again, like a small ball, about the size of a golf ball, and it would just get smaller. But he kept it very round. It would always, you would just see it as it would get smaller and smaller. So he had that, and he had the lota, the ball of tilak, chandan. And then he had his mirror, which was a compact, and that was also silver, and it had an ivory, carved ivory on the outside that was on the top. It was very pretty. And we would open it up, and then you can see the picture of him holding a mirror like that. And then he would apply his tilak, all marks on his, would put real big ones on his arm, put big mark there, and go way up to there, and put another one up there. So this one particular day, Prabhupada, he's putting on tilak. So I opened the door and I went into the room to clean up the room after his taking bath and changing cloth. So I offered obeisances and I sat up. And as I sat up, he looked at me and he got his ball. He was putting his tilak on. So he picked up the ball of tilak and he just threw it. You know, just like a cricket play, just like hurled it, and it went right by my head. And I thought, what did I do? And he goes, monkey, monkey. And And when I came in the door, I left the door open. So just like that, a monkey came in the door and it grabbed one of Prabhupada's sandals. So he saw it grabbing his sandal, so he tried to stop. He wasn't trying to hit me like I thought he was. He was trying to hit the monkey, the other monkey that had come into the room. So he threw it at him. But they're fast. Even Prabhupada couldn't stop the monkey. And Prabhupada was very good. You know, he was an expert. But the monkey grabbed his sandal and took off. So Prabhupada immediately got up and he said, "Come on." Like, that was it. It was like war was declared. And he said, "Come on." And this was my first monkey experience. So I just, he said, "Follow me." So I followed him. And he knew what was going on immediately. He was experienced in this. So he grabbed his cane on the way out the door. And we go out the door, and of course, right up on the roof, right above us, is the monkey. And he's got Prabhupada's sandal, and he's just holding it. And Prabhupada's like, "These monkeys," he said, "such rascals, rascals, you know." He said, "They're so bad, you know." And he said, "Try to get it, you know." So I was taller than Prabhupada, so he said, "Try to get the sandal." So he handed me his cane. So I'm like, you know, holding the cane up, and I'm trying to hook it onto the sand. And the monkeys, forget it. They're like, they're expert. You know, they're just, this is their mystic power. This is what they do. So he's up there, and he's just holding it, and just looking at us, and making faces, you know, making funny faces. And what they do all the time, they stick it in their mouth. So now he sticks it in his mouth. So Prabhupada's jumping up and down, because the monkeys, they're taunting you, you know. They're just like playing with you, like, "Here's your sandal, come and get it," you know. And they'll do like that, and then he puts it back in his mouth, and then and it's always just out of reach. So we did that for a few times, and the whole time Prabhupada's just yelling at this monkey and saying, "These are such rascals, demon monkeys," and going, you know. And I'm like just looking at this monkey, and I'm completely bewildered by this whole situation. So then Prabhupada says, "Go get some sweets from my room." Because Prabhupada always had prasadam in his room. So there in Vrindavan, we had a small jar, glass jar, and inside was para, just a very hard milk sweet, little balls, you know, inexpensive little sweet. So there's balls. He said, "Get some para." Because now we were going to phase two of getting the sandal. So I go in and I grab three of them. And I come back out. So now he's telling me everything, because I'm still not really sure what it is I'm supposed to do. So he said, "You have to negotiate." He said, he said, "You give him a sweet and you get the sandal." And I'm going, "Yes, Prabhupada, yes." And Prabhupada is really wanting his sandal, you know. And now the monkey, the whole time, he's chewing on this sandal. And there were his sharp little teeth. And you can see him making marks. And he's holding it by the toe and he's chewing on the heel. And all the time, he's just, every now and then, he'll take it and say, "Here it is." You know, they want to negotiate. They want something. They want food. That's what they want. They just want food. So now I have it. I have sweets. This is first class food. So Prabhupada says, "All right." So he's saying that you give him the sweet, and as you give him the sweet, you have to get the sandal. So I'm going, "Yes, Prabhupada, okay." So I'm like this. And, you know, it's not a high roof. It's low. It's only so. The monkeys, it's enough so that I can touch him, he can touch me. You know, he can reach down and I could actually touch his hand, although you never get to because he's too smart for that. So I'm reaching up, now I'm holding on to the sweet, and the others I have in my kurta pocket. I'm holding it up, and the monkey's saying, "All right, here's the sandal," and he's reaching down, he's bending down. So he got the sweet and I didn't get the sandal. That was the first one. We tried, you know, we're going back and forth, and I tried like anything not to, you know, get it within his reach. But somehow, you know, he's hanging on with his toes on it. So he reached down and he grabs the sweet and he pulls the sandal up at the same time. So he throws that in his mouth. You know, it was in the side of his mouth. Now he's got one sweet and he still has the sandal. So now he's back to just making faces at us and chewing on the sandal. So Prabhupada said, monkeys, he's gone. Such rascals, you know, it was terrible. He said, all right. He said, do it again. He said, and be more careful. I'm going, yes, Prabhupada, all right. So I get the other suite. So we're negotiating again, and I'm putting up, and I'm being very careful now. I'm not letting it within his reach. And he's, you know, putting down the sandal. Here it is. Come and get it. You know. So he goes. So I lost the next suite. He shoves it in his mouth. Then now he's got two suites with bulging out of his mouth, and he's still chewing on the sandal, you know. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, you can't give him the sweet. He said, you have to get the sand. Yes, Prabhupada. So now I get the third sweet, and we're doing it again. And he got the third sweet. And I still didn't get the sandal. He just, every time he outwitted me, a monkey, I was defeated by a monkey three times in a row with these sweets. And Prabhupada's standing there and he's just shaking his head. Now Prabhupada's looking at me like, you can't even give him a sweet from the sandal, you know. And now the monkey, he had three sweets in his mouth. So now he just gets the sandal, he's holding by the toes, and he gets it and he puts it in his mouth and he goes, and he rips the end off of the heel of Prabhupada's sandal. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, now he's ruined it. He said, never mind. He said, it's over. It was like the battle was done. So Prabhupada said, it's over. So he just walks into the room. So I followed Prabhupada into the room. And then I went back outside. And I look. And the sandal's hanging on the edge of the roof. Like he left it there so you could see it. He didn't just drop it somewhere. He dropped it, but he dropped it in such a way so that you could see the sandal. So I went back in and I grabbed Prabhupada's cane and I walked back outside. And just at that time, there was this very young devotee boy. He was the devotee, Shalavati. She had two sons, Garish and Birbhadra. They were twins. And at this time, they were about 11 years old or so. And I saw one of them, Garish, coming. And I said, Garish, I said, it's Prabhupada's sandal up there. I said, please get it. So he said, okay, Shruta, you know, he says, the young boy. So he goes up the stairs, up to the next roof level. And he runs right up to the front and he grabs Prabhupada's sandal. And as soon as he grabs it, there's like a dozen monkeys surrounding him. And they're all like, you know, what they do, you know, just intimidating him and growling and making faces and showing their teeth and like pawing at him. So, of course, he does what anyone would do. He just screams. He's going, Shruta, the hell! And all these monkeys are there and he's just got the sandal in it. So I had the cane, so I just threw the cane up. So he grabs the cane and then he starts swinging it around. So then all the monkeys, they vacated the area. So then he like runs down as fast as he could and he's like, here, you know, he hands me the slipper. So then he takes off. So then I get the slipper and this heel, it was like the top of the heel, it was still attached but it was torn off, but it was still there. So I just looked at it and there's all the bite marks were in it. So I went into Prabhupada's room and I said, Prabhupada, I said, I have your sandal. And he looks at it and he says, that's not so bad. He said, do you think you can glue the heel back on? And I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, okay, glue it on. He said, we can still use them. And that's what I did. There were 50 devotees there. All I had to do was say, Prabhupada needs a new pair of sandals. And Prabhupada would have had a new pair of sandals. But I only did what he said. I never thought ahead at all. I had not much imagination. So I got glue and I glued it on and Prabhupada wore those sandals every day. The whole time we were in Vrindavan, he kept wearing the sandals. So then right after Vrindavan, we went to Hyderabad, and we stayed at this very wealthy Indian's. His name was Mr. Pithi. And at that time in Hyderabad, 1972, he was like the wealthiest man in Hyderabad. He had a big, big palatial house. In the back, he had like 20 garages, each with cars in them, each with a driver. He had an American convertible car there. He's a very well-to-do man. So as soon as we arrived there, he says to me, "Is there anything that Prabhupada needs?" So it finally dawned on me. I said, "Well, he could use a new pair of sandals." And he goes, "No problem." So he sends his servant out with a driver, with a car, and they come back a few hours later. And of course, I wasn't specific about what kind of sandals to get. So he gets these very flashy Indian sandals with, you know, the big toe spot. And they were all leather and black with, you know, little things here and there. And I walked into Prabhupada's room with this box of sandals. And I said, "Prabhupada, I said, he got you a new pair of sandals." And no one else was there. And I opened the box and Prabhupada looked. He said, "I can't wear these sandals." He said, "They're leather." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhupada." He said, "That's all right." He said, "We still have our sandals." So he still was wearing those sandals. So then finally, I managed to get a pair of non-leather, simple, they were crossed like that, sandals. We found similar. Prabhupada always, what he had, that's what he liked. You didn't, like, get something different. You know, you would get him the same, like his canvas. He had his canvas sneakers, we would call them then. And he always had the same canvas. You'd buy them, you bought them white, and then you dyed them saffron, and that's what he wore. So every pair was just like the other one, you know, the right size and the right type. So then we found him some sandals. So then those sandals, at that time, Kirti Raj Prabhu was around, so he became the person who I gave those sandals to. So they're still there in Kirti Raj's house in Alachua, just right by the temple there. And everything is there, the bite marks are there, Vrindavan dust is on them. They're in a case, nice glass case on the altar there. And if you ever happen to be in Alachua, you want to see these sandals that went through so much and so many things. And Prabhupada just kept wearing them. But he never asked for anything. It was just another one of Prabhupada's very wonderful aspects, that he just kept those sandals. He wouldn't say, "I need." It was not something that ever came out of Prabhupada's mouth, that "I need you to get something." He didn't need anything. He had Krishna. That was it. He had service to Krishna. Once he had one of his Vyas Puja celebrations day, late in the day, a devotee brought him a birthday cake with candles. And Prabhupada looked, and he said, "Well, Prabhupada," he said, "you blow out the candles," he said, "and you can make a wish." So Prabhupada smiled, and he blew them out. And then the devotee said, "Well, Prabhupada, you can make a wish," he said, "and you don't tell anyone." And Prabhupada looked. He said, "I only have one wish." He said, "I just want to serve Krishna." He said, "Anyone can know." But so this was Prabhupada. That was his only wish, was to serve. And what he got, just like his servants. He didn't say, "I need a servant, he has to be like this, 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 this." It was all arranged around him. Otherwise, he wouldn't even ask for it. If he didn't have a servant for some time, he just didn't have one. If Krishna wanted to give him a servant, he'd give him a servant. And until he did, he would just manage from one day to the next. This person would give massage, that person would give massage. His only interest was serving Krishna. So, are there any questions? Or we can go on if there's any questions. Maharaj, thank you for coming, Maharaj. Good to see you. Yes. Yeah. Japa was could go on any time, from early morning when he got up, even in between translating. Sometimes he would sit and chant Japa. on his beads. On his morning walk, he could chant japa. You know, before his morning walk, he could chant japa. Right up to his evening massage, sometimes he would sit in bed and he would chant japa on his beads. And he would pull down counter beads as you were giving him massage. Other times, he would just lie down with his eyes closed. But his schedule, yeah, was the same everywhere, meaning whatever time zone you entered, he immediately adapted to that schedule.
I understand Prabhupada would take his bath and wear fresh clothes before going to do the duties, or?
No. He changed it lunchtime. That's when he changed, yeah. But he was Prabhupada. Yeah. Some things you just don't, you know. But that's when he was told by the doctor very early on to take bath in the middle of the day when it was warmer. He said, for your heart. So the most serious thing to Prabhupada was his health, keeping fit to do his service. So he said his morning walk, his massage, and his Ayurvedic medicine, that's what kept him alive. He took it very, very seriously. It's all three of those things. He went on a morning walk under extreme conditions. Prabhupada would make sure he went on his morning walk. Even when we were in the Alps in Switzerland, at St. Moritz, in a blizzard, Prabhupada went on a morning walk. Not outside, but he went on his morning walk. So he was very regulated, you know, wherever he went. And again, you know, if he flew, he changed 8 hours, eight time zones. You know, like arriving in Delhi 2 o'clock in the morning, and then you take rest. You know, 4 hours later, he was on his morning walk. It didn't matter that he just took a 22-hour flight. It mattered for the rest of us, but for him, it didn't seem to matter. You know, we were like a mess. But Prabhupada was ready to go on his morning walk. You know, he's like out the door. You know, like nothing had happened. We didn't know what jet lag was back. We knew what it was, but you couldn't define it. You couldn't say it. You couldn't say it to Prabhupada that I have jet lag. That was not a, you know. Service only begets more service. That's what he would say. The more you serve, the more enthusiastic you become. That's devotional service. And he did it himself, and he wanted all his disciples to accept it, understand it, and identify with that program. And when you traveled with him, so many stories to tell you about sleeping. Sleeping wasn't permitted, sleeping. Yeah, not in the daytime.
Paris Temple. Mm-hmm. You were the same in the photo. And Yogeshwara writes during the footage. He says how Prabhupada was so impressed to look at the architecture. He didn't think that this architecture still existed. Mm-hmm. Did you hear Prabhupada comment further?
I remember, well, see, that was Yogeshwara. I remember being in, when we went to the mayor's palace there, and walking around, and Prabhupada looked, and he didn't make many comments. It was very beautiful, you know, it was beautiful as far as we could see, but I don't remember him saying anything like that. Of course, that whole day was just very interesting. It was a very bizarre day, and you know, from start to finish, let's just say, they gave Prabhupada this garland to give to the mayor. They didn't put a garland on Prabhupada when he came, but they had made a garland and they gave it to Prabhupada to give to the mayor. So Prabhupada took the garland and he just put it on himself. That was it. It was no. So then they had to they wanted so much, they were so concerned about this mayor that somehow they made another little garland that barely fit around his neck. It was like a choker, you know? And then, And then you see, if you see in the video, you see so many things that go on, and Prabhupada just wasn't going to relinquish his position, who he was, you know. So they tried to shake hands, and Prabhupada just like that was it. He just, you know, pulled his hand back. And then Prabhupada spoke, and then after he spoke, the mayor spoke, and I think it was Yogeshwar said, you know, everyone's supposed to stand up while he speaks. So Prabhupada sat down. So then we all sat down with Prabhupada. So it was a very awkward situation. You know, the whole thing was just awkward. But, Yeah. It was enough that Prabhupada went out. Prabhupada wanted people to come and see him, not the other way around. So from the beginning, everything was backwards. You know, Prabhupada was Jagat Guru. You know, people came to hear from him, you know, and they could sit and listen. But the whole thing didn't work out too well. Almost as well as the conversation with the cardinal, you know. So that was the French, I guess. That was the French system. And, yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
So does it mean that Prabhupada was responsible for the overpopulation in India by feeding the ants all his mana?
Who knows what temples these ants are in now, huh? Occupying the different rooms in the temples. Yes. I said that, it's just like in Russia, all these devotees coming, it's all by Prabhupada's association one way or another. Who knows? You know, who knows how he came, what they heard, what happened when Prabhupada went around the world all these times. You know, that's why he went around. He was spreading Krishna consciousness, not just at the moment, but in generations ahead. He was giving people the opportunity, you know, all the living entities. Like Prabhupada said, you know, to when his sannyasi that had fallen, when he said, "Can I still serve you?" And this was in Mexico City. He said, "Can I still render service?" And twice that happened. And twice Prabhupada pointed to me. He said, "Yeah, now you're grahastha like Shruta Kirti." He said, "So just do service." He said, "Just like Shruta Kirti, you do your service." He said, "I'm not Lord Chaitanya." He said, "Lord Chaitanya," he said, "he could make the animals chant and dance." He said, "But me," he said, "I need all the help I can get." But Prabhupada did make, you know, the animals chant and dance. He made us chant and dance. We were no different. Like he said, what were we doing different? And that was always his point. Like when he would go on the morning walks and he would, you know, he would always give these examples and say, you know, he saw the bird droppings on the ground under the tree. So, of course, it was concentrated in one spot. So, you know, he'd point his cane and he would say, "What does that mean? What does it mean?" All these. This is what it was like being one. When Prabhupada would ask questions, he made you think, you know. Made you think things you never think. We didn't think. We just go on like zombies, you know, just go on. So he said, "What does that mean?" So we all just looked at him. He said, "It means that every day, every night, the bird is sitting in the same spot in the tree." He says, "That means that's his home." So he says, "What's the difference between the birds and the human? He has his home, you have your home." So unless we're engaged in Krishna consciousness, just because you have a so-called wonderful home, $500,000 home, it's still just a home. You sleep in it, you go to the same spot every day, you pass stool, just like the bird's doing. You know, then you'd see another bird with the twigs making the nest. And he would say, "Why?" You know, we'd all just look at each other, you know, "Why?" Because you'd be afraid to say something to Prabhupada, because you didn't want to give a wrong answer, you know. So usually when he asked a question, it was like, uh-huh. So then he would answer his own question. He said, "It means that they're going to have a family. So now it's building a nest. It has to make a home." He said, just like you and me. He said, what's the difference between the animals? He said, all the living entities are doing the same thing. They're all making their homes. They're all going out, getting food, coming back, talking about it, chirp, 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 you know, saying what their day at work was like. Everyone's doing the same thing, all the different species. So he made you see things clearly. This is the business of guru. Makes you see, makes you understand. And then makes you understand we have to engage in this process of devotional service. Just read today, otherwise he said, if you live like dog and hog, you come back as a dog and a hog. You don't need human life. If you're just living like an animal, then you get an animal body. He said, that's the laws of material nature. It's serious. Any other questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.